Monitor Music, Enoch Light, the old Devil Moon. Sitting in for Henry Morgan. Henry's gone to Japan for a couple of weeks. He's learning how to bow, I guess. Polite devil that he is. Henry, as you all know by now, flunked humble one in college. In his absence, I'll do the introductions here on Sunday Afternoon Monitor. In this half hour, that includes George Gallup, Jr., and Dr. Joyce Brothers. For my first introduction, Patti Page and her hit, Stand By Your Man.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, giving all your love to just one man. You'll have bad times, and he'll have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you'll forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. After all, he's just a man. Keep giving all the love you can.
The Gallup poll was the center of a storm this week. Some political figures denounced it. They were the same political figures whose standing had slipped, according to the latest poll. Just coincidence, of course. George Gallup, Jr., editor of the Gallup poll, answers some questions on the most recent findings. Here's Dwight Weiss.
Mr. Gallup, with only a few weeks remaining between now and the election, here's the question being asked by all Americans. What is the latest political score?
Well, the overall picture has changed little since the campaign started. A remarkable stability has been noted since early September. This perhaps is all the more remarkable, inasmuch as the period before the conventions was one of considerable volatility in voter sentiment.
Then Nixon continues to hold the lead.
Yes, he still has a comfortable margin over both Hubert Humphrey and George Wallace. Nixon leads with 44% of the vote of the electorate to 29% for Humphrey and 20% for Wallace.
Can Vice President Humphrey close the gap?
Well, the Vice President clearly has his work cut out for him. President Truman came from behind in 1948 and defeated Thomas E. Dewey in the last days of that campaign, but Mr. Humphrey so far is well off the pace set by President Truman in 1948, who made steady gains during the final weeks and, of course, went over the top.
What is Humphrey's basic problem?
Well, there's no question that Humphrey is suffering among certain groups from his association with the Johnson administration. Record numbers of Democrats are defecting either to Nixon or to Wallace.
Is Nixon having such problems of defection?
No, he is not. Only 4% of Republicans are currently defecting to Humphrey, and only 8% to Wallace. Humphrey, on the other hand, is losing 17% of Democrats to Nixon and 20% to Wallace.
Well, let's turn to Wallace. Is his vote growing?
No. Survey evidence shows that his vote has, at least temporarily, leveled off. For the first time in 5 successive surveys, Wallace has failed to register a gain. His vote increased from 16% in July to 21% in the survey conducted prior to the latest.
What are the prospects for a growth in Wallace's support?
Well, of course, this is the $64 question. Traditionally, support for a third-party candidate has trailed off in the final days of a campaign, and voters return to their traditional party allegiance. This was true in the case of Henry Wallace and J. Strom Thurmond in 1948 and La Follette in 1924.
What are the chances for the election going into the House?
Well, of course, anything can happen to change the situation. But if Nixon maintains his lead, a fairly wide one in all 3 regions outside the South, he can be expected to win a sizable chunk of the electoral votes, probably enough to give him the election outright. But as I said, anything can happen in the next few weeks to change the whole picture.
And will you continue to take measurements between now and November 5th?
Yes, indeed. We shall be tapping voter sentiment continuous surveys right up to the Saturday before Election Day.
Thank you, George Gallup, Jr. We'll be looking forward to talking to you next week. This is Dwight Weiss from Monitor.
So much for the numbers game. In the names game this week, Humphrey criticized Nixon on Agnew, Muskie criticized Wallace on LeMay, and Agnew criticized Humphrey on Muskie. Didn't anyone have anything nice to say about anyone? Well, we're going to say something nice about a car.
For 1969, Ford presents the going thing.
Ford, it's a whole new thing. It's what's happening. It's the going thing. Ford, it's the way to swing. Go and have your fling. It's the going thing. Ford, filled with better ideas. Bang, boom, bang, boom, bang, boom. That Ford gives you better ideas.
Up to 16 minutes past the hour, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.
1 out of every 100 people in the United States today have epilepsy. 2 million Americans, many of them children. Epilepsy affects people of all races and backgrounds. With knowledge and understanding, however, they can lead normal, happy lives. You can help by getting the facts about epilepsy by calling Ingersoll 9-9090. That's IN-9-9090.
If you're all alone, just get on the phone and call on me.
This is Engelbert Humperdinck inviting you to listen to Charlie Brown right here on WNBC Radio.
Charlie Brown, what a funny name.
WNBC, Radio 66, and WNBC FM, New York.
Here's Gary Puckett and the Union Gap on monitor with Over You.
Why am I losing sleep over you? Reliving precious moments we knew.
This is Jay Barbary inviting you to follow the progress of America's first three-man orbital flight on NBC Radio.
You're on your way with Charlie Brown's traffic reports. Weekdays, 3 to 7 p.m. WNBC Radio 66 and WNBC FM New York.
This is John Wolfe, WNBC News. It's 2:30, 75 degrees in New York. Superintendent of Schools Dr. Bernard Donovan has made a move to alleviate the current city school crisis. Donovan says he will dissolve Junior High School 271 in the controversial Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District if the staff is unable to run the school properly. Donovan says he will give the 271 staff a one-day trial, and that if it doesn't work, he will either transfer some personnel or dissolve the school. Donovan says he's lived up to his agreement with the United Federation of Teachers and that the 83 teachers involved in the dispute will go back to the district. In a special WNBC TV program, Donovan said the teachers' union had no right to subject the city to another strike. He also said that police and observers will be returned to the eight schools in the Brownsville district Monday, but police strength might be reduced if the schools operate smoothly. Whether Superintendent Donovan's statement will be effective enough to cut off a threatened citywide teachers' strike remains to be seen. Teachers Union President Albert Shanker has said he will recommend a strike at a meeting of the union's delegate assembly at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Shanker called for a strike action after Donovan reinstated seven rebel principals in the Ocean Hill-Brownsville district. Shanker accused Donovan of betraying the union. Meanwhile, Mayor Lindsay said he will not permit the teachers' union to cripple the school system with another strike. Lindsay did not say what action he would take. In other labor developments, City Director of Labor Relations Herbert Haber is meeting at this hour with John DeLurie, president of the Sanitation Men's Union. Those talks are expected to be moved to Gracie Mansion later this afternoon. The city reached contract agreements with the police and firemen's unions early this morning. Fair and mild today, tonight, and tomorrow. Daytime highs in the mid-70s. Overnight lows in the low 60s. It's 75 degrees in New York and sunny. This is John Wolfe, WNBC News. Now back to Monitor.
was the Baja Marimba Band with Vera Cruz Vane on monitor.
Don't move, just leave your dime out of the ears monitor. Lean back and stay a while now in the ears monitor.
Gene Rayburn here. Well, sir, yesterday we observed the 476th anniversary of the historic voyage of Christopher Columbus. Today we're following the flight of the Apollo 7 with three present-day explorers, the team of Schirra, Eisel, and Cunningham. We'll have a report on their progress later this half hour. Here's Tom Jones on monitor with Help Yourself.
Love is like candy on a shelf. You want to taste and help yourself. The sweetest things are there for you. Help yourself, take a few. That's what I want you to do. We're always told repeatedly, the very best in life is free. And if you want to prove it's true, baby, I'm telling you, this is what you should do. Just help yourself to my lips, to my arms. Just say the word and they are yours. Just help yourself to the love in my heart. Your smile has opened up the door. The greatest wealth that exists in the world can never buy what I can give. Just help yourself to my lips, to my arms, and then let's really start to live. Love enough for two, more than enough for me and you. I'm rich with love, a millionaire. I've so much, it's unfair. Why don't you take a share? Just help yourself to my lips, to my arms. Just say the word.
Next, on the line with Bob Considine, brought to you by Mutual of Omaha, the company that pays.
I spent this past week tagging along after Dick Nixon, and I can attest to the accuracy of a doctor's report that he's in good physical shape. The doc didn't get around to examining the newsmen, which is just as well, I suppose. I'll be back with a thought or two about the physical side of running for high office after this. What does it mean to someone 65 or over to have health insurance that pays? Well, here's the answer from Mutual of Omaha.
Retired businessmen. Widows, 65 and over. School teachers who have put aside their books can all depend on Mutual of Omaha Extra Security to help fill the financial gaps that Medicare can't cover. When you're hospitalized, Mutual of Omaha's Extra Security can pay you $100 a week to start, $200 a week when Medicare coverage is reduced, and $300 a week when Medicare benefits are cut back even more. Mutual of Omaha's Extra Security can also help pay for those extra services you may want that Medicare doesn't cover. So if you're over 65, or have loved ones 65 or over, see your local Mutual of Omaha man for Extra Security. Mutual of Omaha, the company that pays.
A reporter following Dick Nixon, or any other candidate for that matter, tends to wake up each morning, stare at the ceiling, and wonder where he is. When he calls room service for breakfast and the operator, the nice lady, asks him what room he's in, he usually says to her, "What room am I in? What city am I in?" The reason for this state of amnesia is obvious. A candidate wants to touch as many bases as fast as he can, and you can go a lot of places in limited time if you go by jet. Nixon hit Washington, Buffalo, Flint, Michigan, Southern California, three places there, actually, Moline, Illinois, Akron, Ohio, and Dallas at slightly under the speed of sound, and then whipped off to Key Biscayne, Florida. He spoke to crowds at airports, in college and high school gymnasiums, from platforms raised in shopping center parking lots, and he climbed in and out of 100 cars, raced behind howling police sirens through crowded streets and police-cleared highways. He raised his arms high above his head and gave that big V for victory sign about 10,000 times, it seemed to me, threw a closed fist right-hand uppercut every time he pledged to sock it to him, remembered the names of every local candidate riding on his coattails, met the press, pressed the flesh, kept smiling, outshouted his hecklers. I presume he also ate and slept, but I never saw Dick do either. Like the others in the race, Nixon has a set speech. He promises that if elected, he will seek an honorable peace in Vietnam, negotiate with Russia from a position of strength, prod our noble allies into contributing their just share of men and money to the cause of the free world, strike at crime in the streets, give federal aid to retired persons whose living standards have been hit by inflation, put people on payrolls instead of relief rolls, and stimulate private industry. With that as a basic declaration, Nixon inserts items of local interest here and there, one being his pledge to make it a criminal offense to send pornographic material through the mails to American teenagers. His audiences this week were surprisingly young, by the way. Young, clean, and deafening. The few scraggly hecklers who came out to taunt him, particularly at the University of Akron on Thursday night, were completely drowned out by Nixon's supporters and by the candidate himself.
20 years ago, an automobile accident disabled me and completely wiped out my business. Without Mutual of Omaha's lifetime benefits, there wouldn't have been a way in the world to keep my family together.
Learn how it can pay you to have health insurance that pays. Call your local Mutual of Omaha man. There's only one Mutual of Omaha. The company that pays.
On the line with Bob Considine, we'll be heard again later today, presented by Mutual of Omaha and its life insurance affiliate, United of Omaha. In 1 minute, a progress report on the flight of Apollo 7, and we're all on the monitor beacon.
The following pre-recorded political announcement was paid for by the Nixon Agnew Volunteers, Washington. If you really want to help end the war in Vietnam, if you really want to bring back order and justice in the United States, if you really want to restore respect for your country around the world, you're invited to participate in Richard Nixon's campaign for the presidency. So please, volunteer your services. Write Richard Nixon, Washington 20004. Be a part of this exciting political adventure and help give America new leadership. We need Richard Nixon, and right now, he needs you. Together, we can change the direction of our country. Please help by volunteering to work in this important campaign. Write Richard Nixon, Washington 20004. Preceding pre-recorded political announcement was paid for by the Nixon Agnew Volunteers, Washington.
WNBC, Radio 66, and WNBC-FM, New York.
This is NBC News, the flight of Apollo 7. This is Russ Ward at the Apollo Space Center. The astronauts have just crossed the southern tip of Africa and are now over the Indian Ocean in their 33rd revolution of the Earth. The flight plan calls for a scheduled meal period for all three of the flyers at this time. In a few minutes, they are to start another tracking of the second stage booster in a test of their telescope and space sextant. The Apollo spacecraft and the booster are separated by more than 300 nautical miles at this point. Earlier in this revolution, the astronauts reported that a problem, which had bothered them since Friday night, now was cleared up. It concerned a malfunction in the primary evaporator, part of the spacecraft cooling system. Hear the voice of Mission Control, Paul Haney.
Well, any and all concerns about the primary evaporator and suspected problems have been put to bed. The primary evaporator was pronounced working normally in all respects by the ground and by the crew in space. We also heard Wally Schirau report he'd gotten several good pictures. He said he thought he got a good shot of Houston and he got a good shot of Tampa, Florida.
All is going smoothly in the flight. Tomorrow, the astronauts are expected to transmit live television pictures from their spacecraft. Again, Apollo 7 in its 33rd revolution. Russ Ward, NBC News at the Apollo Space Center.
We'll follow the progress of Apollo 7 on monitor and on NBC radio and television this coming week. Here's Bobby Gentry with Sweet Peony.
I want you to meet me at my houseboat. You shouldn't wear your little black rubber raincoat. Write you a letter on thin line note. Maybe hide it in a tree where the houseboat floats. Pull a pulley bone to make a fat wish. Crawl it in the skillet, gonna catch a catfish. Write you a letter on thin line note. Maybe hide it on the table in the catfish dish. Cause it's sweet peony. It's my dream. It's so sweet peony. It's my dream. Houseboat floating down the bayou. Try to catch a fish and now I think I'll try you. Write you a letter on thin line note paper in a tray edition in the bayou too. And if the eyelids are getting heavy, we'll dock a houseboat on the muddy levee. Read all the letters on the thin line note paper. Water them up and meet them on the bayou. Cause it's sweet peony. It's my dream. It's a sweet peony. It's my dream. Houseboat, shooting away your little black rubber raincoat. Write you a letter on a thin line note paper, hide it in a tree where the houseboat floats. Cause it's sweet peony, it's my dream. It's a sweet peony, it's my dream.
Ford presents The Going Thing.
Ford, it's a whole new thing. It's what's happening. It's The Going Thing.
Someone finally built a better Mustang, and it's called Mustang 1969. All new, with a longer hood, a sporty rear deck, roomier inside and groovier outside. Choose from all new models, the luxurious Grande, with elegance and standard equipment, or the high-performance Mach 1, the wildest Mustang ever made, powered by an optional 428 Cobra Jet V8. And for 1969, the Mustang Sports Roof is priced down with a hardtop. See all the Mustangs at your Ford dealers, the place you've got to go to see what's going on.
Ford gives you better ideas. Ford gives you better ideas.
Doc Severinsen's orchestra and chorus on monitor, with summer's coming back. Hey, vacations too, maybe?
Thank you.
civil war continues in Nigeria. Biafra is encircled by Nigerian federal forces. The Red Cross and welfare organizations try to keep Biafrans alive by flying in food and medicine. Recently, an American lawyer, Maxwell T. Cohen, went to Biafra on behalf of the Biafran people, but on a no-fee basis. It was his purpose to collect evidence for a case of genocide committed against the Biafrans. Mr. Cohen, as far as we know, is the first American layman to return with a first-hand account of conditions in that country. He was interviewed for Monitor by Bill Ryan of NBC News.
Mr. Cohen, how many days did you spend in Biafra?
10 days in Biafra.
What did you see?
I saw Well, first of all, I was in the bombing of Saturday, September 28th. I saw wounded young boys. Two of them fell at my feet. I saw the marketplace in which 74 people were killed. I mingled with population. I traveled through jungle trails where I could have been shot at any time. No, there was consistent danger, but you are not conscious of the danger while experiencing the visits, the contacts, the interviews, the associations, and so forth. Danger comes to you as an afterthought, an emotional afterthought.
Mr. Cohen, how is Biafra managing to hold out against obviously overwhelming force?
There is a food shortage. A great deal of the food is brought in spite of the blockade. Some of the welfare organizations are bringing food in under highly dangerous conditions, flying them at night. And the morale of the people is excellent. They will fight to the very end. But the war will continue for years and years because after the conventional warfare and sophisticated weapons are used against them, the Biafrans will go into the bush and there will be guerrilla warfare. And they're prepared for it.
There has been much talk of genocide. There have been allegations that it's the policy of the Nigerian federal government to wipe out the Igbos. And yet in a recent interview in the Christian Science Monitor, the Nigerian ambassador to the United States pointed out a great number of Igbos who are in federal service.
General Alexander and Lord Shepherd, in Nigeria, without ever having come to Biafra, said there was no evidence of genocide, no evidence of atrocities. The facts can be determined very easily. If you wish to inspect the scene of a crime, to see if a crime has been committed, you go to the scene of the crime. You don't stay in the living room with the perpetrator and accept his assurances that no crime has been committed.
Is there any rational solution in sight?
Yes. If the genocide convention is enforced, there would be an immediate ceasefire. Nigeria and Biafra could pretty much work out the situation. I think they're both tired of fighting. They've both lost a terrific amount of manpower.
What is the cost, Mr. Cohen? Do you have an estimate in lives?
I would haphazard a guess that by this time, the total number of lives, both on the Nigerian side and the Afrin side, could very well run into millions.
Out of a population of?
Of 14 million Biafrans. There may be a face-saving necessary, and that's where I think the United States ought to come in rather than the United Nations, and arrange a ceasefire and negotiate a peace.
Thank you very much, sir. This is Bill Ryan, NBC News, reporting for Monitor.
That was Maxwell T. Cohen, a New York attorney, just returned from Biafra. game in the Century 21 Orchestra for Rosemary. For us, NBC News on the hour, and then there'll be more of Mona there. I'm, what's his name? It's on the tip of my tongue. It'll come to me later.
The more we hear, the more we learn. To keep well informed is a major concern. So listen for things that are happening on NBC.
Have you heard how you can earn dividends on your money from the day of deposit to the day you withdraw at the Dime Savings Bank, the big savings bank for all New York? Now, in addition to the Dime's regular savings account, where the latest dividend is 5% a year, paid from day of deposit, compounded quarterly, the Dime offers for the first time a new kind of savings account, the day of deposit to day of withdrawal dividend account. With this kind of account, every dollar you deposit earns dividends at the latest dividend rate of 4.75% a year from the day of deposit, when you deposit your money until the day you withdraw it, provided your account remains open at the end of the quarter. All dividends are added and compounded quarterly. Let your savings work for you up to the day you need cash at the Dime. For information and postage-free forms to open your account by mail, write Savings, WNBC Radio, 30 Rockefeller Plaza, New York, New York. That's Savings, WNBC Radio, 30 Rockefeller Plaza, New York. The Greenacre Shopping Center office in Valley Stream is open weekdays till 9 p.m., Saturdays till 6. WNBC, AM and FM in New York.